This is Dennis Parker, Director of the Racial Justice Program at the ACLU. In 1994, the United States ratified the Convention on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination, also known as CERD. The treaty prohibits racial and ethnic discrimination in all forms of public life, including employment, education, housing, health care, and voting. As a result of the ratification, all levels of the United States government are required to comply with CERD provisions, which require countries to review national, statewide, and local policies, and to amend or repeal laws and regulations that create or perpetuate racial discrimination. The State Department submitted a report on the state of racial discrimination in the U.S. to the UN in April of this year. On December 10, 2007, the ACLU released an analysis of that report called Race and Ethnicity in America, Turning a Blind Eye to Injustice. The ACLU's report finds that while U.S. laws formally comply with CERD, racial discrimination remains deeply entrenched in all levels of American society. The report finds that the local, state, and federal governments have under-enforced the laws that were written to redress racial inequality. Today I'll be discussing the ACLU report with two of my colleagues. Nishambi Lambright is the Executive Director of the ACLU of Mississippi. She'll discuss how race has affected the juvenile justice system, voting rights, and education in her state. Lisa Graybill is the Legal Director of the ACLU of Texas. Lisa will talk about how local police are unlawfully attempting to enforce federal immigration laws on the border, how racial minorities are disproportionately sentenced to the death penalty, and racial profiling. Before getting to the specific situation in each of the states, I'd like to speak just in general about the response to the United States report. And what was striking about the report is not only what it said and sometimes missaid about the status of race in the United States, but the important issues that it left out. And before we get into a more detailed discussion, I'd like to speak generally about some of those issues dealing with education. What's striking is that the picture painted by the United States report suggests that race is no longer an issue, particularly in education, and that the United States is taking an aggressive role in making sure that there is no discrimination in education. That ignores a number of things. Number one, the United States speaks about its role in hundreds of school desegregation cases, some of them decades old, but neglects to mention the fact that its work is largely in closing down those cases and that it has not taken an aggressive stance in making sure that in those cases desegregation continues to be a concern and something that can be enforced by the court. More importantly, what they leave out is the fact that the United States government took a prominent role in trying to make it more difficult for school districts to voluntarily desegregate. And as a result, what we are seeing is that education in the United States is actually, for the first time in decades, becoming more segregated, and that more and more schools have extreme racial isolation that affects black and Latino students. The report also left out a number of other important issues. It left out the fact that very often children of color are not only being consigned to racially isolated schools, but are being sent to schools or are required to attend schools where the resources are less, where the teachers have less experience, where there are fewer textbooks, where all of the resources are considerably less than those of their white counterparts. And strikingly, in a California case done by the ACLU, there are findings that in black and Latino schools or schools with large black and Latino populations, they are 11 times more likely to have high percentage of underqualified teachers. They are 74% more likely to lack adequate textbooks. On the other side are 73% more likely to have vermin in the schools. So those problems of unequal resources still continue and get very little mention in the report. Also disturbingly, and we'll hear a little bit more about specific examples of this, is the failure of the report to highlight a crisis in American education that affects children of color, and that is the school-to-prison pipeline, which are practices which force children out of schools into the criminal justice system or into the juvenile justice system. And what we are seeing nationwide in affiliates throughout the country are that there are everything from intentional discrimination of students being treated unfairly, Native American students in South Dakota, African American and Latino students in a number of states, including New York State, who are subjected to a completely different standard of discipline. At the same time, even practices which appear neutral, such as zero tolerance policies, policies that require that students be disciplined if they engage in certain activities, have been shown to have a disproportionate impact on children of color. And as a result, we find more and more students are being suspended and expelled, that the police are playing a much more prominent role in the schools, in spite of the fact that schools are actually getting safer. So the net result of this is that fewer and fewer students are likely to graduate. And one of the most striking statistics in the United States is the low graduation rate for students of color. That leads to other bad results. Studies show that nearly two-thirds of students who don't receive high school diplomas are likely to be incarcerated by the time that they are 35 years old. And what follows from that is not only loss of liberty, but loss of, in many states, the opportunity to vote, employment disadvantages, and a whole range of things that adversely affect the quality of life for people of color in the United States. Now, looking at some specific things, Nishami, I was wondering whether the report reflected accurately the status of race in Mississippi today.
Yes, the ACLU report definitely highlighted some of the issues that we're having here with racist practices in the public school system. The public school system in Mississippi is still very segregated, and it's still very separate and unequal, so that students of color get very few resources but are punished the most in Mississippi schools, even though Mississippi children only make up about 17% of the population in the state. We account for almost half of the incidents of corporal punishment in the public school system in Mississippi. The rates of suspensions and expulsions are just enormous in Mississippi, and the dropout rate exceeds the national average for students of color.
And Lisa, the other side of the school to prison pipeline equation is what happens in the criminal justice system. What indications do you have in Texas that race still is an important factor in what happens in the criminal justice system?
Well, as you know, Texas is infamous for our high rate of incarceration and the draconian punishment that we tend to impose. So African Americans and Latinos, but most significantly African Americans, are overrepresented in our prison population, about 40% of our prison population as compared to about 11% of the general population. It's especially striking when you look at what's happening on Texas's death row. We're equally infamous for our use of the death penalty. Texas accounts for more than a third of the people that have been executed in the United States since the death penalty was reinstated. Again, 40% of the current death row population is African American. Speaking of the males on death row, 50% of the females on death row are African American.
In other areas, Nishambi, it's been more than 40 years since the Voting Rights Act was passed. What is the current status of voting rights for people of color in Mississippi?
There is still a lot of voter intimidation at the polling places in Mississippi. There is still a lack of training and education about the process of voting in small communities in Mississippi, so that people who do register to vote feel very intimidated when they actually go to the polls. A lot of things that are reminiscent of the poll taxes back in the 50s and 60s still happen today, like the switching of polling places, the miseducation and misinformation provided by poll workers to people coming in to vote, the knocking of people off of voting rolls, not to mention the issue of the disenfranchisement of persons with certain felony convictions. According to the state's constitution, that list is about 10 felonies that permanently disenfranchise certain Mississippians from ever voting again. The Attorney General in 2004 expanded that list to about 21. So basically no one with felony convictions in Mississippi really understands or acknowledges that they have the right to vote in the state.
And Lisa, one issue that received a lot of attention years ago is the question of racial profiling, the concept of driving while black, where people were pulled over for what appeared to be purely racial reasons. Is racial profiling still a concern in Texas, and in what way has that changed over the years?
Absolutely. It's still a very critical concern. In 2001, we passed legislation at the state level that required police departments to report on racial profiling in their jurisdictions. And as a result, we've gathered together some numbers that are really disturbing. For example, 3 out of 4 Texas police agencies report consent searching African Americans more frequently than whites. That's from 2005. And 3 out of 5 Texas agencies report consent searching Latinos more frequently than whites in 2005. In addition to driving while black, we also now have driving while Latino and flying while Arab, Muslim, or South Asian. We've been looking at a situation in a town in Texas, in fact, the town where the Dallas Cowboys play, where the local law enforcement, local police department has decided to start pulling over, as far as we can tell, pretty much anyone that looks to be Latino and demanding a green card, including of people who are U.S. citizens. This has led to the detention of at least one person who was placed in ICE custody before their citizenship was clarified. So we have the danger of local law enforcement taking now federal law into their hands and using that as an additional tool to perpetuate this racial profiling. And finally, we have spoken to a number of Arab, Muslims, and South Asians in Texas who, in attempting to board planes to enter a courtroom, for example, in Dallas we represent an individual who was required to remove his turban by a judge who told him to take off his hat or go to jail. So those kinds of racial stereotypes are still perpetuated absolutely by law enforcement in Texas. Unfortunately, the net has just gotten wider.
You talked about how there's a change from the driving while black and Latino to consideration of racial profiling of Asian and Arab people. What has been the effect of the discussions on immigration, particularly those that have been happening recently around the upcoming election? And what is going on in the border between Texas and Mexico?
Well, I think that there's been a collapse of the, to a degree, legitimate concern about terrorism and the utterly unrelated interest in inappropriately profiling people who are perceived as potential terrorists. And that's been directed at the border to the extent that the war on terror has been used to justify increasingly invasive procedures along the border from Texas all the way out to California. The problems that we're seeing along the border are many-fold in terms of, again, local law enforcement taking it upon themselves to enforce immigration law, something they're not prepared to or trained to do, and all of it's under the guise of fighting terrorism or fighting the war on drugs, but the numbers indicate it really just leads to increases in deportation, often without due process.
And what effect does it have on the experiences of all people of color in Texas?
I think that the pre-existing or already well-founded, unfortunate fear of law enforcement is, in many communities, is only compounded by this kind of effort. The major city chiefs, for example, have come out strongly saying that local law enforcement shouldn't engage not just in racial profiling but also in federal immigration law enforcement, because the local law enforcement job is to protect everyone in the community which they serve. And the erosion of trust that has existed for a long time between some communities and local law enforcement has only been compounded by the expansion of the criteria that local law enforcement are using to exceed their authority.
Nishambi, in a lot of discussions about race, people have argued that the major work of battling discrimination was done with the passage of laws 40 years ago, and that we should be concentrating on leaving race out of the discussion of national affairs. What's your sense of the status of race in Mississippi now, and have we gotten to where we've been aiming to go?
No, not at all. Racism is still alive and well in Mississippi and all over the country. I think that the criminalization of race and poverty have made it okay to discriminate in education and in housing and the criminal justice system, so that it looks differently than it looked back before the Voting Rights Act and all of the victories made during the Civil Rights Movement. So it looks a lot different, but these discriminations are still based on racist policies and practices at the national, state, and local level.
And Lisa, what's the message you would like to get out about the role of race and ethnicity in Texas, particularly as compared with the picture presented by the United States in its report to the UN?
Well, we're at a critical juncture in Texas, as we are in the rest of the country, but people often say, as goes Texas, so goes the rest of the United States, insofar as our population is shifting to become what some people call a minority-majority state. And if we do not take strong, proactive, embracing, and constructive positions about how to deal with the role that race regrettably continues to play in the ways we've discussed in terms of affecting access to the polls, most critically education and imprisonment, we will only fall further behind and fail to deliver the promise of our state and our resources and our people to live their lives to the fullest potential. So I think we're at a really critical moment here, and we need to look towards the future and adopt policies and practices that are both make sense and acknowledge the continuing role race plays in everything from our school system to our criminal justice system and many points in between.
Thank you for your description of the status of race and ethnicity in each of your states, and thanks for listening to the ACLU podcast. To learn more about the Convention on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination, go to www.aclu.org/CERD.